Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob here, and I'm getting you ready for the Wiggle Room this week. But since I am still on the road, Josh Wiggler is going to be taking over the Wiggle Room on his own. And this week he's going to bring in Antonio Mazzaro, our good friend from Post Show Recaps, to talk about all the stories going on in Survivor Cole Wrong after episode number 9. So you're going to hear Josh and Antonio here on the Wiggle Room. I'll be back with David Bloomberg for Why Debbie Lost. So enjoy the show, and then everything will be back to normal for Survivor Know-It-Alls this Wednesday. So enjoy this quick word from Wix.com, and then it's the Wiggle Room.
A great business needs a stunning website. And with Wix.com, you can do it all by yourself. Wix.com makes it easy to look amazing online, no matter what type of business you're in. Show off your images in a beautiful gallery, grow your contact list, and get all your social media in one place, just the way you want. Your customers are going to love it. So, what are you waiting for? Show the world what you can do. Go to Wix.com and create your stunning website today. It's easy and free.
Hey everybody, what's going on? Josh Wiggler here with a special edition of The Wiggle Room. No Rob Cesternino this week, so it's a little uncomfortable here in The Wiggle Room. And wait, what's that? Oh my god, an insane vortex has just emerged in the middle of my room and I'm getting sucked in!
You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound. A dimension of sight. A dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into
the Mazzaro Zone.
Oh, no.
You're here.
Oh, God, I'm in the Antonio Mazzaro Zone.
How do you like it?
Oh, my God, it's scary. Everybody's a mannequin.
Yes, nobody's a mannequin. They're all real,
They're
Josh.
All real. My glass is broke. I can't read anything. It's not fair.
Why is my world so weird?
It's not fair. I don't know. But now the Wiggle Room has become the Mazzaro Zone. For 1 week only, Antonio Mazzaro of Post Show Recaps fame. Antonio, how the hell are you doing?
This is the Antonio Zone. I'm loving it. This is fantastic. I'm doing great now.
Oh,
I want to live where Rod Serling tells stories about my life.
Yeah, you get to write the stories. You are Rod Serling.
Rod Serling or Sterling? Is it Donald Sterling?
You're Roger Sterling.
Roger Sterling.
Madman. Madman Antonio Mazzaro. Those of you who don't know Antonio, you don't listen to enough podcasts. Antonio is on like every other Post Show Recaps podcast. He talks about Better Call Saul with Rob. He talks about basically every show with me and Rob on most shows recapped. Antonio and I podcast about The Leftovers together. We're going to be podcasting about Mr. Robot together this summer.
So exciting.
Very excited about that. Antonio has also been on tons of Survivor podcasts here on RHAP. He's basically my work spouse. That's how I view you, Antonio.
No, well, me too, Josh, except I don't work. So this is just, we're just spouses for
you
me.
You just live in the Mazzaro Zone at all times.
Yes, me and my mannequins.
Yeah, so we've talked about mannequins recently on a podcast, haven't we?
We did, but I'm not sure that anyone will have heard that.
I don't think so. But for your knowledge, everybody, this is not the first mannequin conversation I've had with Antonio in the past 42 hours.
No, it's not.
It is not.
Josh, you're my best mannequin.
I'm the best mannequin at your future wedding?
Yes, I want you in my dollhouse.
That's going to be great. I can't wait to be welcomed to your dollhouse.
Thank you.
So we're talking to Antonio this week. Rob is off. Rob is still doing all sorts of New York shenanigans from his trip out here for Live Know-It-Alls and some personal stuff and everything. Sad that you couldn't make it out here, Antonio. I really missed you this week.
I wish I could have been there. That just means that we're building up residual hugs. You know that, right?
Oh, I know. When we do finally re-meet and hug, it's going to be like you're all going to feel it. It doesn't matter where on the planet you are. There's going to be an earth-shattering moment that's going to happen.
It will register seismically.
Yeah, it's going
to be. It may create a vortex.
It might. We might actually go to the Mazzaro Zone.
Yes, there may be a Gozerian that emerges.
Oh, God.
Can unlock a gate.
Yeah, we're all going to be covered in marshmallow fluff by the end of that.
I'm not drawing that out anymore.
Yep, let's just leave it right there.
Yep.
Antonio, how are you doing? Things are good. Life is well.
Things are good. Things are good. What could go wrong, Josh?
Nothing could go wrong. So far, nothing has gone wrong. I mean, we've lost some memorable people along the way. I am as sad as just about anybody, assuming that you were a Debbie fan, that we lost Debbie this week. But I think we lost her in the middle of a ridiculous episode. Great, great episode with a really insane, hard to break down tribal council. Having done the Live Know-It-Alls thing when Fishback was on Cambodia and I was filling his shoes at Caroline's in New York City, I can cannot even imagine trying to break that episode down in front of an audience of hundreds of people. So kudos to those guys for being able to do it. This was a really complicated one. I'm glad we don't have to talk too much strategy here on this podcast.
Yes, I love being able to talk story instead of strategy. Let's talk narrative, Josh. Yeah, let's talk themes.
Let's talk narrative. Let's talk themes. Let's talk story. That's what we do here on The Wiggle Room, and we're not talking about strategy, which we do sometimes end up getting into that mode. But Antonio, I'm curious from you, since this is really the first time you and I are getting to sit down and talk about Ko Rong. You were on the voicemails earlier this season, but that was forever ago. The season has really moved ahead in a very big way. It's been a season that was really undersold. A lot of people were going into this with very low expectations, thinking it wasn't going to be a great season. For my money so far, it has delivered almost every single week, if not every single week. What's been your take on Ko Rong so far?
Yeah, no, I mean, hardly any dud episodes. Every tribal council has been rather exciting or eventful. Sometimes the people you think are going home go home. And I think you can plot out, like, I think some people, David Bloomberg, I think, had called on this podcast, not the Wiggle Room podcast, but on RHAP, that Debbie might be the next to go. So some of it is plottable, but how we get there is so backwards and forwards and in all directions that it's been an exciting season. Like other people, I'm wondering if another shoe's going to drop. Are we going to get a medevac right at the most important phase of the game that screws everything up? We did get a medevac at the merge, and I think that that's tough. It does feel like maybe you took a little shine off of the merge episode, but look, the episode after that, all hell broke loose. People were flipping alliances. People were going crazy.
Nick came down with Illback.
Nick had it. That horrible. Listen, poor Nick. Illback is terrible.
Really terrible.
Yes, it's really, I just feel so bad. Nick, Illback sucks.
It's bad.
Yeah, it's really bad. So at any rate, that happened for Nick. That was tough to deal with for sure. It was tough to hear how that all played out. Just hearing about Nick in Illback is just really horrible stuff. So it really is terrible. But anyway, that was a tough loss to have the merge episode go down the way it did. But then, you know, you get right into that. You get right into a lot more crazy stuff happening. People flipping on alliances, games being changed, big moves. Maybe too early, maybe too not. And so I think it's great. I think it's really evolving as a season for everyone having low expectations. We're getting a lot week to week. So I've been very excited throughout.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how I feel yet in terms of gameplay. Like, is this, you know, this isn't Cambodia. It's not second. Well, it is Cambodia, but it's not Survivor Cambodia. It's not Second Chance, which I think, you know, is one of the most hard fought games of Survivor that we've ever seen, with a lot of high level thinking and crazy maneuvering and so many shifting alliances and moving parts. I don't think that we're quite getting that here on Ko Rong. And I think that a lot of the think in terms of modern Survivor is like people just have to be playing their guts out and making high level moves in order for the show to be really, really strong. And I don't know if that's necessarily true. I mean, I'm on the record as being a big San Juan del Sur guy. I love that season. I don't think that that's a mastermind season by any stretch of the imagination. It's mostly a character driven season. And I'm not trying to say that the people on Ko Rong are playing poorly. I think that some confusing decisions have been made. I think that there have been a lot of brain farts along the way. I think there have been a lot of mental slip-ups that we have seen, but I also just think that the characters are really driving this season for me, and these people are so, so likable, and it really just proves the really solid old point that the reason why Survivor is on the air for 32 plus seasons is because it's got an incredible format, and as long as you find great people for television, it's going to be pretty fun.
Yeah, and I'm really excited to jump into the Wiggle Room or the Mazzaro Zone or the Antonio Zone, whatever you want to call it, this week to talk about the people, because I think you're right. I think that does drive the story. You talk about San Juan del Dur, San Juan del Sur.
Love it.
Call it what you want. After Jeremy goes home, the next kind of boots, they're just a sort of a lesson in futility, really. Wes Nail goes home because Keith can't stick to the plan. Then Reed goes home. You got Alec Christie going home. All of that stuff playing out, really not high strategy. But some of those characters just aren't really nearly as endearing as some of the people we've got left. And by endearing, I mean people that we want to watch on television.
Right.
Not necessarily people we want to, you know, be friends with, but people that make good TV. There are not a lot of bumps on logs left in this season. There are a couple, but it's really...
They should get that checked out.
I think Dr. Rupert is probably looking very closely into all those bumps for sure. But anyway, yeah, I think that you're right. I think the characters really do carry it. But that said, I expect that the gameplay is not going to get worse. I don't think it's going to go San Juan del Sur bad. So I think it's a good mix. I actually think that's the best thing about the season is you have some characters, and while there isn't one dominant, there's not a Kim Spradlin out there.
Right.
There are people that are playing the game. Sydney's playing the game. Aubrey's playing the game. Debbie's playing the game. There is a lot
not
going
anymore.
On. Not anymore, Josh, and that's sad. Should we eulogize Debbie?
Oh, we got to eulogize Debbie. We got to talk about Debbie. Curious to get your take on Debbie, who was billed coming into the season as kind of the female coach, lady coach, queen coach, perhaps. Do you think that she lived up to that title, or is it more nuanced than that?
I think there's a lot in that. I think that it's funny because pre-merge Debbie, we all thought she's driving this bus. She's killing it. She's opening the bomb doors.
They're open.
Like, they're open. She's really doing this.
She's moving with a purpose, and she's moving right now.
I don't know if we ever saw Coach in any one of his iterations. Maybe the third time out. Maybe Coach is driving the bus a little bit more earlier in the game. But Debbie was really driving, and so I think in some ways she supersedes Coach in terms of having a lot more to hang her hat on. In terms of being ridiculous, I think Coach still takes that cake for sure.
I think that, you know, Coach, when you think back on Tokenshins, he is driving the Warrior Alliance thing really hard. He's saying, I'm going to reshape the way that Survivor is played. It's going to go to the hard fighters. It's going to go to the tough people. We're going to lose all the weaklings. And that really ends up serving well for people like JT and Fishback to kind of mangle and take advantage of. And a lot of those Timbira people, too, I think were taking advantage of that. I don't think that Coach is really, you know, I think that he's driving the bus, but I don't think that he realizes that he's going to be going off the cliff with the bus at some point. Whereas I think for the way that Debbie was playing and the way that she was presented on the show, at least, she definitely had moments where she was driving erratically, like slow down in that lane. You cannot go 100 miles per hour right now without causing some sort of accident. But I think that, you know, there were times where she was driving a lot more sensibly than we would have expected from somebody who is billed as a coach analog, as a coach successor.
Yeah, so
I think that was the big surprise about Debbie for sure.
Do you think she was a bus driver at any point in her life, Josh? Is it possible?
Yeah, she may have been, she and Sandy may have had a lot in common.
I really would like to get a copy of her resume. Yeah. I don't know. You know, I'd like to just really evaluate the CV and just figure out, you know, what are your key details? How many of these jobs? Civil Air Patrol?
Like Civil Air Patrol, yeah.
So much. Did you even know there was a Civil Air Patrol?
No. Is that going to be revealed in Captain America's Civil War?
It's quite possible, Josh. And if so, I'm sure we'll hear about it with you and Kevin Mahadeo on post-show recaps.
Shameless plug.
I have no shame. Are you kidding me? You've talked to me. You know this. We started off by talking about my mannequin collection, Josh.
Yeah.
But yeah, I am curious about the Debbie because I wonder if we're going to see Debbie again. And the thing with Coach, after Tokenshins, he comes back. He's a villain. He doesn't understand why he's a villain. He doesn't believe he belongs in the villains' tribe. He doesn't fit in with the villains. He's wearing the feathers in his hair, doing his Coach Chi. People aren't necessarily liking what he's putting off. He's crying to Tyson at night.
Right.
These are really rough things that happen with Coach his second time out. And then when he's out there for South Pacific, it's a little bit of a different story. That's where I think he's doing, maybe he's driving a little more cautiously, but he's driving, but maybe not realizing that he's being driven as well. And that's the same kind of thing. But I think that I don't know what Debbie's second chance would look like if we see Debbie again. And if we do get a kind of a season where we're bringing back returning players, what kind of role does she fit? She said the old lady is her kind of archetype. I'm not sure there are too many other characters like Debbie.
Yeah. I mean, I think that Debbie, you know, she really does stand alone in that way. You know, she said to me in her exit interview with me and in a lot of other exit interviews that she was doing, how she feels like she fills out that archetype that's very difficult for CBS to cast, and also an archetype that's very difficult to succeed in the game. Her exact quote on the matter is, the other flip side is, I'm 50 years old. When I interviewed, I told them the hardest slot to fill on Survivor, both for CBS to fill and to be a player, is the quote unquote old woman, if you will. You're not going to have a cadre of six old women like you will for the, if I may, TNA crowd of women. And they bond. They can talk about the Powerpuff Girls or Twitter or Instagram. I don't have that. I realize that puts me in a tougher spot. I don't know how much Powerpuff Girls conversation was happening out there on Kerrang. I feel like that's a year early for the reboot of Powerpuff Girls, which seems to be really popular right now.
she's proving her old person bona fides. Yeah. She doesn't, you know, she just thinks that's what all the kids are talking about these days, and their Twitters and their Tamagotchi pets, all that crazy stuff, Josh.
Yeah, but I feel like her inclusion of Powerpuff Girls, along with about a million other gems in this interview that I did with her.
That's truly outrageous.
Where she really just went off the rails. I think that that really speaks to the fact that Debbie is one of a kind. And I think love her or hate her, I know a lot of friends in my real life who are, you know, kind of casual Survivor viewers, really only watch the show because I've kind of told them, you should be watching this show. It's easy to watch. It's one of the greatest shows on TV. And for my money, it's my, you know, it's my prime viewing experience of just about anything. Please watch the show. A lot of those people have decided to give it a whirl. They very kind of just, you know, fair weather. They watch every once in a while opinions. And I have one friend who loathed Debbie. Could not stand her. Just thought she was so annoying. Whereas for me, I think that she's just remarkable television and produces these absurd lines, constantly talking about glucose to her brain and her frontal lobes. And just speaking in a way that we have not gotten from basically anybody else on Survivor. So she might lump herself in with the quote unquote older woman archetype. But I think the fact that she's talking about Twitter and Instagram and Powerpuff Girls, among the many other versions of nonsense that she's spouting off in her exit interviews and during the game, the fact that she is losing like 10 pounds per interview, it seems like, based on who she's talking to, I think it really stands out and signals that Debbie, she is in a class of her own. You know, she really is a unique standout character, and you got to imagine that if Debbie wants to go back to Survivor, Survivor wants Debbie back as well.
I hope that's the case. She really is like the kookiness of Tarzan with the kind of talking about the brains and all these important things, but the legendary kind of, is it true? Is it not true? Paul Bunyan-esque kind of tales of coach. There's just so much to love about Debbie. And I can understand how someone might be annoyed by her, but I think you just need to shift your perspective a little bit. And if you have the perspective of, would you rather have her or somebody who's not going to do anything, who's not going to give good confessionals, who's not going to make jokes, who isn't going to be fun to laugh at, who isn't even going to annoy you, who's just going to be a bump on a log,
yeah,
then I think you'd rather have Debbie 10 times out of 10. And I think that Survivor sometimes does struggle finding 18, 16, 20, however many people you want to put on the season. I think they sometimes struggle with finding every single person is going to really pull. Even in All-Star seasons, there are people that just don't get the edit or are just quiet out there. Debbie's never going to be that person. And for that, we should love her for making our TV a little bit more enjoyable.
And I think that, you know, eccentric character type often is somebody who also doesn't move the game in any, you know, really solid direction. You know, thinking about Philip on Redemption Island, who is a totally bizarre person. You know, he is just such a strange character, and he's doing all sorts of weird stuff. And in Karamoan, he's playing the game. Your mileage may vary on whether or not you like that. But in Redemption Island, he's really, you know, just like hamming it up and hogging it up to the camera and being this ridiculous persona, and ultimately just ends up being a guy who latches on to Boston Rob and moves forward. And there's an argument that that's a solid way of playing the game. It guaranteed him, you know, a second or third place finish. What I really love about Debbie is not only is she such a character, she also was really moving and shaking things, and she was taking a leadership role in that stuff. And that pushes the game into directions that it might not otherwise go. I mean, smart money was on not Pete Bagenstos or Liz Markham being on the outs of that first brains vote. Smart money said that Debbie or Joe was going to be in big trouble there. And the fact that that was not the case, I think also speaks volumes about Pete and Liz, but I think speaks volumes about Debbie's abilities in the game. And yes, she has her moments where she's super aggressive with someone like Ty when she's trying to build an alliance with him there. But she also has a lot of shining moments that I think that you can look back on. So the thing that's great about Debbie is not only is she an out there, colorful personality, but she's a complicated personality as well. Always hard to pin down. One week she looks like she's really, really strong in the game, and Nicole Stradamus might be right. The next week she is just like whiffing so hard. The next week it's back to the week before. You know, it just kept shifting. So you never really knew what was going to happen with Debbie from week to week. And from a viewing experience, I wonder how that's going to play on a rewatch. But on the weekly, it was so fun. It was so fun to like tune in every week of Koh Rang and see what's Debbie going to do now. Luckily, we still have her at Ponderosa, and we still have her on the jury to see how she gives jury face. Hopefully it's pretty solid. But I feel like, you know, the big tragedy would have been if she was some pre-merge person. You know, no disrespect to you pre-merge people. The way that I'm saying it certainly implies disrespect. I do not mean it that way. But I think that it would have been such a shame to not get, you know, this bonus content that we're going to get out of Debbie.
Yeah, that's the biggest shame. There have been a lot of people, Josh, voted out before Survivor merges who would have provided with a ton of just great television, and they were just gone. A lot of entertaining characters bite it too soon. And so I don't think it's disrespect at all. I know exactly what you mean. It really would have been a shame if we had any less Debbie. And so I'm glad that we're going to get her on the jury. That's also why I'm excited about a second chance, because what's her self-awareness level? Right. Is she really taking in any of the comments that have been made about her? Is she really just blowing it up? If she gets back out there the second time, is it Debbie at like 2.0, which is worse than Debbie 1.0? And does she go home in one of the first two episodes? She seems like she would be the kind of person, you're right, that would be an easy boot. So she would have to, I think, adjust her self-awareness a little bit, get a little bit of that kind of, oh, well, the first time I came out, I tried a Godfather move. It didn't work. I shouldn't have been playing that hard to tie. I shouldn't have pushed myself out there like that. I shouldn't have trusted Julia. Aubrey was right. Does she have that self-awareness? Does she not? That's why I love Debbie, because I have no idea the answers to that, and I would love to see it again to see how it plays out.
Yeah, I don't know when we're going to get Debbie back. You know, I did ask her at the end of the interview. I said, you know, you gotta know that if you want to go back, Survivor's going to have you. Do you want to do it? And she, you know, took a long pause before she said, if I would go back. If I would go back. And she emphasized that, you know, she wasn't, you know, it didn't come off to me that she was really feeling strongly about wanting to play again, outside of the fact that she adopted me during the interview and said that she and I would be partners in a future Blood versus Water season.
Oh, that is definitely happening. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to hold her to that for sure.
Yeah, which is also a big part of the reason why I am really just chomping on those kneecaps right now, because Debbie is my mom. So I really just have to make sure that everybody loves Debbie. But she was really saying, you know, the way that she was saying it, I wasn't sure if she was, you know, maybe she's playing cagey or maybe she's serious where she's just not sure. She did tell me after we got off the line that she's got like a lot going on right now. So, you know, who knows if she's going to move in that direction.
I'm shocked.
Anyway, she's got a few new jobs lined up.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, she's going to be here. Actually, I have a clip from this. She is going to be joining a very popular music group. If you want to cue this up in the Mazzaro Zone.
Oh, she sent you her demo tape?
Yeah, she sent me her demo tape. So here's track one.
Yo, I'll tell you what they want, what you really, really want. So tell me what they want, what you really, really want. They wanna really, really, really want.
Puzzles never be like lovers. Aubrey is my friend. Sure, she did betray me, but friendship never ends. Puzzles never be like lovers. Season 36. It's Coach versus Emmy, and that's the way it is.
Well, that's great.
Yeah. So she's already pitching her future season against Coach. Season 36. I feel like that's a good layoff.
What would her name be in that group?
Brainy Spice.
All Debbie Spice.
All Spice. Debbie
all Spice.
Spice. Yeah, because she's done
yes,
every
she's
single
done
Spice.
Everything. I like it. I like
yeah,
all
so Spice. That was Debbie with Wannerby.
of course.
So that's pretty good. You know, she's branching out, too. She's not just, you know, honing in on the pop music thing. She's also got a rap collaboration that's coming out pretty soon, if you want to check this out.
Oh, snap.
The boat's about to be red. I think I'm getting five. I can't believe it's happening in my own tribe. If I had one true ally, we could make this work. I look to my left and I see my homie shirt.
16 on the beach. Oh, wait, there's two more. One dog is about to send somebody home. Out comes my super idol. It's a tad bit late. One dog and one or D had to regulate.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Wander D and Wandog had to
Wandog.
Yeah.
That's great.
So she's collaborating there.
Listen, if Wandog's on the hook, then you know it's a hit.
You know it's good. So Wander D is a thing that is happening as well. She has to regulate. On top of that, she's pitching a new cartoon series that she showed me the opening sequence from. I ripped the audio from it, so you can hit that right now.
All right. Here I go.
It's time for Debbie's Brainiacs. And we're Brainy to the max. Don't just sit back and relax. Joe Del Campo must go fast. It's Debbie's Brainiacs. Come join Deb Wanner's brothers.
And Deb Wanner's sister Dot.
Kyle Jason loses his shorts while Wanner targets Scott. Deb always stays at Chandler whenever she gets swapped. She then proceeds to get the boot. So much for Debbie's plot.
Weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
She sang a lot about her downfall there.
Yeah.
It's an awfully weird thing to pitch an animated series off of.
You know, it was a really very Shakespearean downfall. So I think that she's, you know, she's a very wacky thing to do.
Yeah.
Yakking a lot about what she was up to there on top of her cartoon series. Antonio, it doesn't end there. Debbie is also, she heard what we had to say. She's caught wind about Ice Cream Mon. She knows that Neil Gottlieb is working on a video game app. She decided to get into that business as well. Here is a sneak peek at the opening theme from Debbie's new video game that should be launching sometime this fall.
Ty Track, Sydney Storm, Fitzgerald, Jason, Joe Del Campo, Julia, Scott Zero, Aubrey Bracco.
Was there a character in that game named Fitzgerald? Was that the character's name? Just checking.
Yeah, Fitzgerald is in there.
Poor Michelle.
Yeah.
She doesn't even get her first name in there.
She's in there. Again, it's a shame that Pete Bagenstos didn't make it too far because Baraka jokes write themselves. So that's a shame. On top of all of this, Antonio.
Oh my gosh, so much. Red Lobster.
On top of all of this, in between all of this, she is going to continue shifts at Red Lobster. But not only is she going to be working as a server, she also has bought herself a Red Lobster franchise. That's pretty cool. She owns her own franchise, pulling a little bit of a page out of the Sherry Beathman playbook.
Sure.
And on top of that, not only does she own her own Red Lobster, she actually bought and started her own shopping center that is going to house the Red Lobster among many other really, really great businesses.
Wow.
This is a clip from her new commercial that is promoting her mall.
All right.
Come to Debbie Warner's Mall. We've got indoor rivers and a restaurant for fondue. I know that you're gonna want Red Lobster or no food. Our pet store has about 40 cats.
Well, that's as long as she really, you know, if she provides the TLC needed to keep that up, I think she'll be fine.
I think that she'll do just fine. So yeah, much like how her lower thirds change from week to week, the exclusives from Debbie were just nonstop.
She's killing it.
She's really killing it. If she doesn't need to go back to Survivor, it sounds like she's doing just fine in her life outside of the show.
I would love to go to that Warner Mall.
Yeah, Warner Falls.
Yes, that would be
name,
great.
That's the name of the mall.
Warner Debbie Warner's Mall, Warner Falls.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got an indoor river. It's got a restaurant for fondue. It's
unbelievable.
But who's going to go there when it has a Red Lobster?
Everybody just wants the Red Lobster. Yeah. But, you know, their pet store does have 40 cats.
About 40 cats. It's an approximation. It's not.
Well, they're constantly exact. Getting adopted.
Not exact. So that's what's going on with Debbie. I think that is a fine eulogy for Debbie. Sad to see Debbie go. Really happy she's still hanging in terms of the jury phase and the Ponderosa videos. And I'm sure I would be shocked if we don't see Debbie on Survivor again at some point.
Yeah, and her GarageBand skills are amazing.
All right.
I just got to say.
So moving.
Very impressed.
Moving past Debbie, we should start talking about some of the other major stories from this episode. Really curious to get your take on this, Antonio. We've been charting sort of the rise of the villains of Kyle, Jason, and Scott Pollard, who, in my estimation, have really been drawn out as the bad guys of this piece. I think that was really solidified throughout everything with Alicia, and I think that's irrelevant in terms of how you feel about it on a personal level. You know, do you think that it's bullying? Do you think it went too far? I'm almost less interested in that than the fact that the way it was presented on the show, the fact that it was on the show, really indicated that these are not necessarily the people that you want to be rooting for, or that the show wants you to be rooting for. And then last week, we got some really touching moments from them. We got this touching moment where Jason is talking about his child, his daughter who has autism, and we get this story from Scott about his mom and his family and how everything he does is for them. And then this week, they've been blindsided the week before. Nick goes home and they decide to go full hands.
Yeah, full hands. Hands off.
Hands off. The hands are off. Apparently, Debbie hid their hands as well. She she stole their hands, their shorts, and
she was
buried
so them proud of that.
Very proud of that in the exit interviews. But what's your take on this? This is, you know, if we've been charting sort of the Heisenbergian arc of these guys, you know, watching them break bad, have they broken fully bad at this point?
Yeah, it really is peculiar because you talked last week in the Wiggle Room, whatever room we're in now.
We're in
last
a zone. Week, we're in a zone.
We're in a zone. We're in the zone.
Yeah.
Last week, though, you talked with Rob about how maybe those touching scenes are included for maybe they're going to make it longer in the game. You want to round them out. You don't want them to be pure villains. I'm not really sure what the story is. I don't know. Do you think maybe they included the touching scenes because they don't want full villains? They think if people are full villains, then the season becomes almost unwatchable when they're just causing trouble out there. Have they done audience research to say, we don't like just one-dimensional villains. We want to see more so that we don't just hate people.
Yeah.
I don't know because this week they did go full villain. Josh, they even flipped Ty. They made Ty
into...
So this is, and we'll definitely have to talk about that, but the clearly heel antics from them, they went full Hans, whether it was Russell or Brandon is up for debate.
They went like full Bebop and Rocksteady, like at Tribal Council, like that whole Rochambeau where they're standing up and doing that whole thing really felt like two over the top, overly drawn Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle bad guys blowing things up. It really felt that way to me.
Yeah. And the thing is, they were putting on such a show of that. Oh, now we're going to do this. Oh, sorry, I lost. You know, oh, that's good luck, man.
Right.
Knowing full well that if either of their names gets called, Ty plays the super idol and that's that. And they're just being really cocky about it, even though they're on the bottom, except for none of the three of them went home, especially not Scott or Jason. Why weren't they the number one targets? Everybody's so afraid of their idol. It's funny because Scott has an interesting kind of thing where when he's away from Jason, we almost started to like him. His story was he's kind of a smart guy. He's putting two and two together. He convinces Ty not to play that idol. And that's a huge strategic move because that idol is this huge shield for them at this point. They don't even have to use it as a sword. They can just carry it. It's like a suit of armor. They're totally cloaked and covered. People are afraid of it, such that they're voting out people that are in their alliance, nominally speaking. So I think I think they're in it for the long haul from a story standpoint, and I think that's why we got a little bit of the shine applied back to them last week because they knew that the antics were going to get a little more unbearable going forward. It's very curious why we've seen such full portraits of these people. I'm not complaining in any stretch. I prefer my editing and my Survivor to evolve and have people not just easily fit into, and apologies to Angie Kuntz, people shouldn't easily fit into archetypes. Sure. I think that it's better when we have characters that we haven't really seen before, or a heel or a villain who maybe we've been told, listen, they're people too. I love that. I think that's great. So I like seeing that on the show with the two of them. And I don't find their antics any less insufferable because I know about them more as people. I knew the Jason story before it showed up on the air because he talks about it a lot on Twitter. Scott Pollard is a guy who I didn't need to know he was taking care of his family, but I'm sure that that's a part of the story that is very important to him. And I think that probably resonated with people. So I don't know. I think it's great to see all of this kind of playing out rather than just get a one-dimensional portrait.
Well, yeah, listen, people are complicated. People have many depths.
We contain multitudes, Josh.
We do. We have multiple dimensions in us. We have multiple Mizarro zones inside of us. And yeah. I think that it's important to express that where it makes sense. I do wonder about why that's included in terms of where we are going moving forward, because once you dump the water on the fire in the middle of the camp, and that is like a centerpiece of the episode, and you are calling it a strategic decision and everything like that, and it is really very obviously grating on these people on a very personal level, I feel like from that point forward, it's really hard to imagine them as anything but antagonists on the show. So it's hard for me to wrap my head around completely. I think that they executed a move in this past episode that they ultimately didn't really end up, didn't end up necessarily saving their butts. I think that Debbie was going home anyway. I think that Aubrey and Sydney plan was going into effect no matter what. But it was very showy. They have this super idol that is very, very, very difficult to bust through. Requires a lot of going through mental loopholes to figure out, and numbers loopholes, as Shireen might say, to go through those and figure out exactly how you're going to bust up that super idol. So you got to imagine more antics are in the future. And I don't know about long haul. I don't know if, you know, both of them make it all the way to the end. But I do expect at this point that we are talking about Kyle and Scott, if not as, you know, very, very end of the line people. I think that at least one of these guys has to be an end game character.
Yeah, jury goat. I mean, there are people in the game who have already articulated that. Julia has said that, and Aubrey's smart enough. I think Sydney's smart enough. I think everybody out there, with the exception of maybe Joe, can see their story for what it is without seeing an edited version, without seeing anything presented on TV. Once those guys hide the machete and they hide the hatchet and they're dumping water on the fire, then it becomes very clear what their role in the game can be.
Debbie, in her interview with Gordon Holmes, says straight up that Kyle is reprehensible. So that is the view of one juror towards one of these two guys.
Yeah, and I like I said, they don't need to see anything. A lot of times people come off the show and like, well, we didn't know that that was happening, or I had no idea someone was burning me in confessional. I didn't know that was the story that was being told while I was out there. Their story is 100% clear to the people that are out there. They've cast themselves as the villains of this story. And so it totally makes sense in Survivor parlance to bring a villain along with you if you think they're going to be a jury goat. And so, yeah, I think you're right. At least one of these guys is probably in it for the long haul between Jason and Scott. And I don't know, maybe both of them are. You're right. The plan for Debbie was going to work whether they did their little stand-up Rochambeau or not. But I think the idle paranoia at all, and the very feeling like they made it needed to split the vote 3-3-3 and all of that, I think that paranoia is what caused the players to make a different move. And I think that paranoia is really fomented by the way that Kyle and Scott are acting out there. So I think there is something to that. I think that they know what they're doing. I don't think it's a winning strategy, and I don't want to talk too much strategically. They've chosen to put themselves in this role in the story, so I think they know ultimately that the story is probably not going to end well with the two of them unless the two of them are sitting in a final
two. That's really it. You know, yep. It's really hard to picture how one of these guys wins unless it's head-to-head in a final two.
Right, and maybe they're smart enough that they're doing the math, or they're assuming that's what's going to happen and that's their goal. Fine, but I just don't see otherwise how that's going to play out. Everybody else, unless maybe it's the two of them and Joe, and even then, we've seen winners who probably would get a lot of bitter jury votes thrown their way. So it could easily happen again.
You know, to go back to the Rochambeau moment and to kind of launch us through to the next thing I want to talk through with you is I saw this on Reddit shortly after the episode was posted that Kyle and Scott passed a major opportunity to tie during the rock, paper, scissors and then say, oh, well, then we should just give this over to Ty.
Oh, yeah, that's a very good
point. That would have been good. I mean, it was already fun TV, but that really would have been great.
Just because of the pun, would that have also been great?
I feel like that's a great use of the pun.
It's a tie. It's a that tie. Means.
I feel like that would have been a solid tie. Like, that would have been a solid pun. It would have been really good.
Yeah, I think that they did miss that. That said, their pun game hasn't been especially strong this season.
Yeah, hasn't been fantastic. but we see Ty this week. Ty is on board with this heel turn. Ty is, you know, he is going against the tide this week. He is dumping water on the fire as well in his Q&A with Dalton Ross the week before. Probst teased up this episode as saying, you know, Ty stares the moral compass in the face. What choice is he going to make? And we saw that he went to the dark side.
Yeah, he did. And
the dark tide.
Begrudgingly so, yes, begrudgingly so, the dark tide of the moon did play out. It was really sad for Ty. It was hard to see him struggle with that. And he put out the fire and Scott got blamed, which was awesome. And that was great. So Ty wakes up in the middle of the night, puts out the fire. He comes stumbling over, not even a single ember. Oh, this is too bad.
I know.
Knowing full well it's him who put out the fire.
Okay, everybody, this is the part where I hop out of the Mazzaro zone for just a quick second to give you a heads up that the next 2 to 3 minutes or so are going to be talking about what some might consider to be a minor to moderate spoiler that happened on Twitter this past week. If you're really sensitive to that stuff, maybe skip ahead the next 2 to 3 minutes, and then you should be in the clear.
My question for you is, Josh, from a story standpoint, because when you arc these things out, when a character goes over to the dark side, typically, then some other things become fair game. Ty was just handed an idol. Well, he had his own idol. He was handed another one. He now has two idols and has the superpower. Now that he's morally flexible, now that he's lubricated up a little bit, morally speaking, is it possible that he keeps them both for himself?
Well, I mean, this is, you know, we'll hear about this in the David Bloomberg Twitter press conferences that he holds, but I believe that he got Jason to say that Ty gave him the idol back immediately. We don't know how much is that canon? Is are the Twitter press conferences canon? And we'll see on Wednesday night whether or not that holds. But Ty certainly had every right to hold on to that idol if he had wanted to. He certainly could have.
Well, the Ty who walks into the beginning of the game is giving that idol back immediately. Oh, it's not mine. It's yours. You loaned it to me. We were protecting each other.
You would think so. But then you also have to remember that the Ty that we saw in the beginning of the game was already out there looking for idols.
That's true. But once he found his own, I think it was, I wouldn't lie to somebody. I'm not going to lie to somebody like that. But once he crosses the Rubicon and he's putting out fires and lying about it and playing it up, not even a single ember, Josh.
Yeah.
Then I think that Ty is like, well, shit, man, I'm already in for a penny. Might as well be in for a pound.
Right. Remember Rubicon?
I do remember Rubicon, nice. Man. James Patch Dale is a great brooder.
Yeah, no, he's doing well for himself. He doesn't need Rubicon.
Are you sure?
He's like in a lot. He has bit roles, but you know, he's in prominent stuff.
He's not really doing that well for himself. I looked up his IMDb the other day with sadness because I love that guy, but he hasn't really been popping the last couple of years. We don't have to. This is post-show recaps territory, yeah, Josh. Yeah,
we don't need to get into the James Badge Dale of it all, but let's keep talking Ty. And I think for Ty, this is great. I mean, the beauty of Survivor, this is why Survivor is so awesome, is that it's not scripted. So there's certainly a futility in talking through the story and the character of Survivor in terms of trying to predict things. That's really, really a difficult thing to measure. I know that, you know, lots of people love their edgic and all of that stuff, but really difficult to predict how actual humans are going to behave.
Right.
If this was a scripted story, though, you would feel like the arc is Ty, this guy who is like this unbelievably lovable character, the likes of which we haven't seen in a really long time. Somebody who is just such an obvious breakout person that people, it's just, you know, he's going to be a fan favorite. If that award was still in the offing, he has that lights out slam dunk every single day of the week. And then this guy who we had no idea, like, how are you going to get this guy who has an immunity idol to play ball with Kyle Jason, who has the other idol, and they would form a super idol together? How do you get those two people together? It was just so unfathomable back in the pre-merge, or at least in the pre-swap. And now it's happened, and Ty has gone, you know, full Sith. We saw him.
Kylo Ren.
Yeah, he went Kylo Ren. He really did. He's Kylo Ren, and he pours the fire, you know, he pours the water on the fire. And I think that what the next step would be, you know, in this arc, if you're just looking at it from like a traditional storytelling point of view, is some sort of redemption. It probably has some sort of sacrifice play involved. You know, you know, it's like we talk about this a lot when Rob and I do Game of Thrones podcasts. We always go back as a touchstone of like Darth Vader picking up Emperor Palpatine at the end of Return of the Jedi and tossing him down into the pit. Like, that's the type of thing that you expect here from like the Anakin Skywalker arc. Is Ty going to do something with that idol that he owns, or if he gets in possession of the super idol again, or if he still holds on to it as we're going into this next episode, is he going to do something that is going to ruin things for Jason and or Scott? I have a hard time seeing it near term, just in terms of, you know, the logical strategy stuff. Like, it's hard to imagine why Ty would break away from it. And it's hard to see how Ty goes back to the side of the angels. You know, I think that on a show like Survivor, which again is, you know, a real situation with these real people doing real things, I don't know that we're going to get that Ty redemption.
Yeah, the only reason I bring it up or want to talk about it is, he seems there's a lot of trepidation in the stuff that he's doing. A couple times in this past episode, he's expressing doubt or he doesn't feel great about what Jason and Kyle are doing. And then he's doing it by the middle of the episode. He's putting out the fire. And not only that, but that sad pantomime when he walks over. So it's like he really does go full over. And so the question is that going to weigh on him? Is he going to feel guilty? Because he isn't a story scripted character. He's a real human being. And you got to imagine something like that is probably weighing on him. He probably feels pretty bad about it. And so the question becomes, is he going to act impetuously or out of emotion, not logically, because he feels bad about something? Is he going to come clean about something? Is he going to tell somebody something? Somebody going to catch him in a weak moment and treat him really nicely like a human, and he's just going to break down? I could foresee any of those things happening. I mean, the more and more we get deeper into this game, the longer people are going without the kind of things sleep-wise, water-wise, food-wise, even if they're getting rewards that they're used to. So as he wears down emotionally, is this the sort of thing that comes bubbling to the surface, this guilt from what he's done? I am curious as to whether we're going to see that play out over the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fun. I hope it's going to be fun. I am worried about it. I think that just in terms of where he is in the game, to get into that aspect of it, hard to imagine why he would break away from Jason and Scott now. Jason and Scott, who have made themselves public enemy number one in a tie with Ty Trang. I feel like it's hard to imagine why he would break away from the idol, why he would break away from two people who clearly are not super beloved around camp based on what they did in this past episode. And given, you know, one of the other huge stars of the episode, Julia, you can really see now why it would be attractive for Julia to hop on board the Ty Trang train with Kyle and Scott. Why it would make sense for her now that this whole move happened where Debbie is gone. Why it would make sense for Julia to side with the super idol, to side with the bad guys. And it's also really easy to see her pulling Michelle over with her. So I just feel like that's probably, my instinct is that's where we're headed, is some fivesome of Scott, Jason, Ty, Michelle, Julia, and it looks really bad for Aubrey, Sydney, and Joe in that scenario. It seems for me it's hard to reason why, if Ty has already gone this dark and has gone this far, why would he not just stay there when there's game reasons to stay?
Yeah, that's true. And the only reason would be is if he, you know, were for some reason emotional or impetuous or all the things I said. We have seen things come bubbling out of Ty that don't make a lot of sense. We've seen him make some illogical choices. We've seen him say things that he absolutely should not have said about the super idol. We saw him looking for the idol very early in the game. So he doesn't always do the logical thing. And that's the only thing I would say to put a cap on this is, you're right, doesn't make very much logical or game sense for him to do it, but we've seen multiple instances within this game,
sure,
where he hasn't always done the logical or game sense.
Hey, I'm rooting for that because it'd be against his best interests, but it'd be really great television. So that's my primary concern. That's my primary rooting interest.
Well, mine too. And that's, I'm glad you brought up Julia, because I think Julia is really amping up the great television factor.
Where, yeah, she was great this week. She was awesome. Yeah,
she's great. She's great because she's in the middle and because she knows it. And because she knows she can kind of work both sides against the other. She can get information from both sides. Debbie was feeding her info, so I'll be curious to see, even though she voted with the Alliance, she's got to still be somebody that Aubrey doesn't really want to trust. But I don't see how Aubrey drives the stake between her and Michelle. That's difficult to pull off. It's
needs
even more
them.
Difficult.
She needs, yeah, them right now.
Yeah, so I think that Julia is going to be fascinating going forward, because you're right, there's a lot of appeal to kind of taking Michelle and going with the three of the guys at that point and saying, look, well, the two of us will take one of those guys to the final three and we'll split it out. Hopefully in her head thinking, I'll take both of those guys and we'll go from there. But I just think she chose to put herself in the middle of this kind of fight between two sides. And by choosing to put herself there, I think she made herself a far more interesting and dynamic character. And I really enjoyed seeing that this week.
It was cool because, you know, we did get that moment earlier in the season when she's basically on Exile Island, when she's right on Braun Beach all by herself. And at the time, you know, it was dramatic and you felt for her. You like felt awful for her. That's just such a terrible position to be in. She's so young. She's 18 years old. When she starts the game, she's turned 19 somewhere along the way. We did not get to see the birthday celebration on the show. But, you know, a lot happened there, and it wasn't ridiculously compelling at the time just because I don't think we were super invested in Julia. But Julia really came alive this week. And she had come alive a little bit at the end of the swap when she showed up and was hanging out with Scott and Ty and was definitely an active part of things there. But this was really Julia's coming out party. I like her. I think that she's got a great personality. I think that she's really fun. She obviously, you know, raised the hair on the back of Aubrey's neck and everybody's neck except for Debbie's when she made that move to play at the reward challenge with the dudes. I think that that was very dangerous. If she hadn't won immunity, you got to wonder if she is going that night. But in terms of where she is, in terms of the story and where she can drive things moving forward, I think that she's going to be instrumental in this next episode. I think it's really easy to see Julia, like I said before, pulling Michelle in one direction or the other, or Michelle pulling on Julia. But I think that their relationship and where they want to play, I think, is going to be an enormous, enormous part of what we're coming into on this Wednesday night.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I'm fascinated by that because Julia has really drawn my attention and seeing her struggle on Exile and seeing how that all played out, like you're saying, I've been more captivated by her than Michelle by a long shot. You almost forget that Julia is so young.
Right.
And she's out there at 18 doing this because there is a lot of thought in what she's doing. Maybe it's not the most elegant game there's a little bit of brusqueness to it, but she really is thinking about it and she's working it. And I approve of that. I think she's getting a pretty good edit in that regard. And I'm looking forward to seeing, you're right, the emotions between the two of them, the bond that will form or be broken. I think that's all great. I'm just loving seeing a malleable Julia in the game and kind of making moves. I think that's really, when you talk about whether the season could end up a dud or not, I think she and her role in that is huge. And I think that's fascinating. That's something that works from a character standpoint, a strategic standpoint. No matter how you want to look at it, I think it's working really well. So thumbs up on Julia for sure.
You mentioned Michelle, and Michelle is somebody that, you know, you can't go online and not hear somebody say Michelle is going to win this thing. A lot of people saying, you know, it's been talked a lot on the podcast recently, this idea that Michelle is getting these quotes on the show that really don't need to be there oftentimes, and just that visibility is supposed to clue us in, or people are taking that visibility to mean that she's just the de facto champion of this thing. Personally, I haven't fully seen that yet, and this is coming from somebody who picked Michelle as my winner pick before the game began, so I'd be excited to be proven right just in that regard. But in terms of the actual season, I feel like we have not seen that much. And I know we're talking a lot about Julia and how Julia was a driver in this episode. For you, I have to imagine you feel that Michelle is firmly in the backseat.
Yeah, 100%. And maybe not even the backseat, maybe the trunk.
Yikes.
And I think that's tough.
That's
because
terrifying.
Look, Rob.
Get out of there. Get her out of there.
This is what happens in the Mazzaro Zone,
Josh.
Oh,
God. It's like upstate New York all over again.
We don't talk about that. So what I would say is Rob didn't like it. Speaking of things we don't talk about, when a couple of episodes ago in the Wiggle Room, you talked about Nick Majorano's chances as a potential winner. And you said, look, if he's going to win this game, I think we would have more from him from an edit standpoint. Not that we would be making him look like a hero, but when there are opportunities to have anybody comment on a challenge,
we would just see or hear from him.
Yeah. And that's what we've been doing with Michelle. We've been seeing and hearing from her at times when it could be anybody. And we're not getting the Joe Del Campo. We're not getting some of these other characters come in. We're getting Michelle's thoughts about it. And why it seems like incongruous is because she otherwise doesn't seem to be making that big of an imprint on the game whatsoever.
Yeah.
And so it's like she's getting this sort of edit that makes it seem like she's really a key player in the game, but everything else that's happening in the game, she's not a key player at all.
Yeah.
And so I think that's why it's really standing out to people, because what we're seeing in terms of who's driving the vote this week, Aubrey comes to Michelle and says, we're going to do Debbie. And Michelle's response is, I'm like, I never thought I'd see the day. It's like my Michelle impression, not good, but I assure you the cadence was on point. And I think that's tough because that's not Michelle driving anything. That's not Michelle saying, I better go talk to Aubrey and see what's up. I got to get myself in the loop here. That's not Michelle owning anything. That's Aubrey making moves and Michelle just saying, oh, that's what's going on. Okay. So I think that's tough. And as far as that goes, look, Survivor is aware of what we say about the edits. That's why I don't think Rob likes to get into it, because there's some belief that the producers don't really like us talking about who's getting what edit. Steven Fishback has been parading around doing this for God knows how long.
Right.
This is it's going to be on his epitaph. Here lies a guy who talked about edits.
Yeah.
But this is what Steven does. It's his bailiwick. This is his bag of tricks. And so I understand that it's something that maybe people don't like, and he's keen to that. But what I would say is maybe that not liking it shows that they're aware that we talk about it. And maybe we're getting Michelle kind of as a different version of that. Like, she's getting some of those statements, but maybe it's a fake. Maybe it's a red herring. Maybe it's there. Look, because the flip side of this is, when Monica goes home on Second Chances, that's the flip side of this, because we're complaining that we're not hearing enough from Monica until right before her boot episode. So there's a very fine line, to be sure, because if you start putting a bunch of Monica quotes and front load the season with those, you're like, wow, Monica's going to be a major character on this season. And then when she's not a major character on the season, you're like, oh, we got totally faked out. So I don't know. I don't know what's going on with Michelle. Listen, the way I would prefer it is I would prefer that they do what Josh, you and I talked about, Top Chef at Reality Wrap-Ups. and we covered each episode of Top Chef. I think Top Chef does a better job with their character building edits than Survivor sometimes does. And I don't know why that is, but I think with Top Chef, you get a more well-rounded view of most of the contestants when you only have eight left. You know who these people are. You know what their thoughts and goals are. You don't just hear from them in their boot episode. You know what's going on. Survivor doesn't always toe the line that well. Sometimes you get a purple edit out of somebody. And I think with Michelle, I know a lot about how Michelle thinks and acts, but I don't really feel like any of that is telling me that she's working or playing a good game. And I think that that's difficult. So that's my thought about her edit and her story is the story she's getting is somebody who's commenting on the game and who's definitely out there on that island and has thoughts about it.
She exists.
She exists and she can speak. But as to whether or not she's having an impact on the game, I'm not seeing that edit whatsoever.
Waiting to see it. Waiting to see that happen. Hopefully that happens. Hopefully something really interesting happens there. But, you know, who knows? It's been quiet. I mean, we've been seeing stuff, but we just, you know, it's not adding up to much to me. TBD on how all of that goes. How about Aubrey and Sydney? What was your take on Aubrey and Sydney this week? What's your take on this story? Because we talked a lot about how Sydney and Debbie seem to be secretly close. We've talked a lot about Aubrey and Debbie being close up until this. Now Aubrey and Sydney, they seem to be a new pair. Obviously with Joe in the mix as well.
Yeah, I love Sydney. I really love Aubrey as well. But I think both of those women are really kind of dynamite casting. And I throw Julia into the mix as well as a real hit in terms of casting. And Survivor doesn't always do well with this. They don't always cast women, I think, who can really pop on the screen in every kind of way. Aubrey's been great in the challenges. Aubrey's been great kind of as the narrator, giving us our Oregon Trail quotes or talking about the crazy things that are going on in the game and really being the narrator of the season. I love her for that. And I really love what's happening with Sydney. I love that her style is more like, it's kind of the anybody but me style. But when Aubrey proposes, let's get Debbie out, Sydney's like, you know what? I'm okay with that.
I'm down with it.
We can do that. We can do that. And so I don't know if there's anybody that Sydney would say no to. And that's, I think that would, if I were another player in the game, I might be a little concerned about that. But as far as that goes, I think it's great because I think that puts her in a position where she can really work just about anything. And she doesn't seem as threatening because she doesn't seem like she's anchored to one big group. I would be concerned she'd cut my throat if she was willing to cut anyone's throat and that there was no loyalty being shown. But I really like Sydney as a character. I like spelled my name wrong. I love that when she sees her name come up on a vote. I think that's great. She has no idea if she's going home or staying at that point. She's just remarking on what's happening real time. I think that's awesome. I think she's great. I'm a big fan of both of those ladies, and I would love to see them both on Survivor again. Doesn't have to be. They can be on a theme season. It can be
on
something that works.
Could they be on season 36 with Coach and Debbie?
I don't know. Where would they play in? How would that work? They're not really opposites. We could throw them in there. Sure. They could be Debbie's Angels or Coach's Angels. Right. We could play it that way. Sure.
Cochran's Dream Girls.
Yes. Cochran's Dream Girls. Yeah. That would be great. So, gosh, if Sydney's in Cochran's dreams are different than Aubrey thinks they are, I think. but anyway, it is because Sydney is nothing but confidence. So I love that. I absolutely love that they're a pair. I hope that you're not right, and I hope that it's not a situation where Michelle and Julia just kind of Voltron form with Scott and Ty and Jason, and that leaves Aubrey and Sydney and Joe on the outs. I hope that's not the case, but I could see it. I really could, and that's tough because I think Sydney's not close with Michelle or Julia. I don't think Sydney's close with anybody. She turned her back on her closest alliance, so she's sort of floating around in the game right now.
I would have loved to have seen a little more fallout on an emotional level from that. You know, Sydney had been, she'd been with Jason the entire game.
Yeah.
The entire game, and short of the swap period, she was close with Scott, it seemed like. I really would have liked to have seen a little bit of the emotional fallout of, you know, with Scott and Jason tearing up the camp. What is Sydney specifically, what is her take on these two guys now, and what is their take on her specifically right now?
Yeah, I would love that as well. They just seem like it's done. It's a done deal. She's dead to us. She threw us under the bus.
Dad to me.
Their reaction was very infantile, I gotta say. Like, it's a game, for crying out loud.
And let's talk about this really quickly before we start wrapping up. It's just, you know, sort of the nature of sabotage, which we have seen in the past. And, you know, with someone like Russell Hantz, it's considered strategic to some degree. Then there's, you know, the Jatiyas of just like having a nuclear meltdown and spilling out the rice. Do you think that there's anything to the idea of sabotage being a positive tool that you can use in the game? Or is it just immediate jury management? Suicide.
Yeah, it's a valid question, because Sandra does it right, as you're saying, and she gets a lot of credit, or she gets no kind of negative energy when she's burning Russell's hat and doing negative things around camp. I think
there are people who don't love that from Sandra, and I think that, you know, Sandra's a divisive character in Survivor history herself, and I think that there are people who don't love that. But I think that if you were to look at the Sandra supporters, I think that most of them would say, "Oh yeah, that was great."
Well, and more important, it didn't cost her with the jury.
Right.
And it partially didn't cost her with the jury because she was the worst of other evils in the jury's eyes.
Best of evils, yeah.
But on
top of that, too, a lot of that stuff was just like stealth.
Yeah, that's true.
People just didn't know that she did it.
She didn't pull a Scott Pollard here and say, let's just end the suspense. And right. I'm going to pour this gasoline can out of water, thankfully, not gasoline, on the fire.
Right.
And have that all play out that way. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's ever a really good strategy. I think that if it's covert, I think there's some, that's the Russell Hantz taking socks or, you know, hiding things. I think that that can be beneficial if it's covert. I don't know. You're denying yourself something when you take the machete away. You're denying yourself an easy way to eat. There's some strategy in that. Can we talk about Big Brother in the Mazzaro zone?
it's your rules. I'm not going to be able to play ball, but you can say whatever you want.
I'll just say there's in the early Big Brother season, Dr. Will, famous kind of Big Brother psychologist, or psychological assassin, psychological warfare.
I'm the one who named you a psychological assassin.
That's exactly right. He gets everybody to fast and get involved in this thing where they're going to play on this certain clock, and he gets everybody on board with it. And it is all a plot to just control them. And it's very Svengali-like, and that's his whole goal with it, is to get them into this routine where they're responding to doing what he's doing, and they're, you know, they're his puppets. And so there's a great element of strategy in that. That is something that he's keeping to himself, and he's playing it out that way, but it's going that way. In Survivor, I think it has to be covert. I think as soon as it's overt, you're just branding yourself a jury goat, and that's fine. If you think, hey, listen, at this point, I heard Kyle say, like, well, we're going home anyway. Like, we may as well do this. And it's like, so if you think that by doing this, instead of going out eighth, you're going to finish second and get more money and get more TV time and more notoriety and get to see your family and all of that, then maybe that's a strategy at that point.
Yeah, maybe that's actually a really good move.
I got to feel...
If you're just drawing dead there anyway, you know?
Yeah, I got to feel like I prefer the players who, when they're in eighth and they're drawing dead, they're doing what I think Neil would do. And I think the in that role, you're doing everything you possibly can to get your way back in. And maybe there's some of that is psychological. Maybe some of that is trying to, I like to see them do it and blame it on somebody else, throw somebody under the bus, or I'd like to see Kyle do it and blame it on Scott. You know, like, I wouldn't do that or whatever. That maybe to me resonates a little better than just full out taking it on and saying, we're separate from you now. It's weird though, because Julia came right over to them. So yeah, it did seem to work on some level.
Yeah. We have not yet talked about, and we really got to start wrapping it up, but we have not talked about the biggest star of the episode, and maybe the biggest star of Survivor Ko Rong right now, Mark the Chicken, Damn. What's your take on Mark the Chicken, who is lighting up the internet this past week?
He seems to be more of a character this episode than Michelle, Josh.
Wah, wah, wah.
That's your winner.
Damn.
Yeah, Damn is right. Mark the Chicken... Listen, you talk about stories. Is this going to end with Mark the Chicken getting got, Josh?
Oh, God, I hope not.
It has to, right?
No,
that's
brutal. Are
they going to free him on the last day?
No, they can just let him go. They can let him go. That's what they did in Micronesia. They didn't kill the chicken there.
That's true.
They can preserve the chicken here. Although as soon as Ty gets voted out, if he gets voted out, you do have to imagine there's no one protecting Mark anymore.
No, and didn't Ty at some point this season say, like, I'm going to kill the chicken and then you can vote me out?
I don't know. Yeah,
like, I'm here to do that for you.
Yeah, he threatened. He said he promised to the swap tribe that he would create Vietnamese chicken, according to Dr. Pete. He really wanted that. That's why he didn't want to go after Thai at that time.
So he's used not Thai chicken, but Vietnamese chicken.
Yes,
or is it Thai chicken?
It is Thai chicken.
It would be Thai Vietnamese chicken.
Yes.
It's like fusion.
Yes.
So, yeah, there's some element of that. I love that the chicken is named Mark. By the way, big fan of giving animals like normal people names, like Steve and Bruce.
Like Steve Chicken Morris Dam.
Yeah, I think it's funny if somebody has a cat named Mary. I think that's a great name for a cat, or like Mary Jo. Like, I like especially like older person names for animals.
My wife's childhood cat's name was Sarah.
Sarah's a great name for a cat. Yeah, great name for a cat. So there you go. I like normal person names for pets. I really do. I'm a big fan of that. One of the things I'm a biggest fan of in the world, really. Very so cool. I love Mark the Chicken. Mark is a great name for a chicken. I don't know. Mark the Chicken seems like a guy, a chicken who would work in a cubicle. Maybe he like rides bikes in his spare time. Yeah. He's just a normal guy.
Feels like he should have an Adult Swim show.
Yeah, he really does. He's just a normal guy who happens to be a chicken. Not a big deal, Josh.
He might have a segment on Debbie's Brainiacs.
Oh, man, you talk about writing itself. This is all playing out very well. How would he speak? What would Mark the Chicken sound?
I don't know.
He just have a very plain, boring, blasé voice,
yeah,
right?
He's just a very normal guy.
Hi, I'm Mark. Yeah. I'm the chicken.
Very straight up. Probably voiced by H. John Benjamin like everybody else.
That would be great. That would be great. Archer the chicken, Bob's Burgers the chicken, H. John Benjamin has a chicken.
Coach McGurk the chicken. Yeah.
That would all work really well. I like that Mark the Chicken has kind of become a character on this season. And this is the chickens on Cambodia there, or I'm sorry, on Second Chances were players too. That was something that was more kind of a story that wasn't told on TV as much. Mark the Chicken has become an active member of this tribe, and I love it.
It's
great. He should get a vote.
I really hope he doesn't get got. That would be awful.
Oh no,
that would be really awful. I wish you hadn't put that in my head, but now it's hard to see like any other scenario.
Would Survivor jump the shark or the chicken in this case?
Yeah.
If they had a confessional where he was sitting on a log and it said Mark in the downstream and he was just clucking, and then it was like maybe 4 seconds and that was it.
I mean, I would love that. I would be so in on that. I would be really, really down with that. I do think it would be a little bit weird and a little too far.
I agree.
But yeah, Survivor's gotten cute with the confessionals in the past, and we saw it this season with Debbie's lower third, so I would welcome it. I would welcome it. But I know a lot of people would be really like, oh, way too far. Way too far.
The lower third would just say, Mark, chicken.
Damn. Yeah, that's his occupation.
Yes. So.
Chicken with damn in parentheses.
He works at a dam. That's perfect.
Yeah, he does. All right. So just looking forward, as we start, as we close this thing down, this is your final chance, Antonio, to stake your claim, to plant your flag, as you so often do on post-show recaps. How is this going to play out? Where are we going from here? Moving into this coming episode on Wednesday night, and even further down the line, if you want to look that far, what's your take on where Korong is going based on what we've seen story-wise on the show so far?
It's tough because coming into this podcast, I wouldn't have necessarily said what I think the outcome. You sort of persuaded me that probably Julia and Michelle, who are closer to than probably anybody that's left, probably their best move is to go with the three and vote out the three. There were the two brains and the remaining brawn in Sydney, who are opposite from their tribe or opposite from their alliance at that point. And that's probably the best way for it to go down. What I don't know, though, is who breaches that, who makes that connection happen. I don't see Michelle doing it. I can see Julia doing it, but Julia didn't vote with the guys this time. And sounds like she didn't really keep them in the loop. So she didn't go with them. Are they going to trust her going forward? Are they not going to trust her? Did she let them know that Debbie was going home? I don't know that. I don't sense that that's what happened. So I'm a little skeptical that they're going to just welcome her with open arms. But what else do those three guys have going? They may see that as the best move. But the problem with that is those three guys are three. Michelle and Julia are only two. So I think in order to really form those two with the two villains, you probably have to get rid of Ty first. The other thing that I think I'm really tracking or planting a flag on is we really see the Rochambeau, the big ceremony of now I have two idols and all of it. So I think people know that the super idol is real. I think people are understanding a little bit more about how the super idol plays out. I think Aubrey is smart enough to say they gave those idols to Ty because the person who's going to play the super idol has to be the one who stays in the game. So we're going to have to vote for the person who they think we're not going to vote for. And I can see that all getting very interesting and almost a battle of wits kind of scenario. I can clearly not choose the wine in front of me. I can see they know that we know that we have to put the votes on the person that they don't think we're going to put the votes on, so that that person has a super idol and goes home. I think all that stuff is really going to be very interesting to see how it develops. And that's more than anything, that's what I'm tracking is, what is Aubrey's response going to be to seeing that idol stuff all play out, to knowing that there's two idols for sure confirmed in play there, and to really seeing ultimately if there's a super idol that comes into play, how do you split the votes? How do you make that work in order to make the right play? And I think that's what I'm most intrigued about is, what is Aubrey's response to the idol stuff that went down going to be going forward? Because I think she could have accounted for getting rid of Debbie meant getting back with Julia, and it partially meant getting back with Julia because Joe wasn't on board with it. So now what can she do with Joe? I think she can account for some of that. But I don't think she can really account for all this stuff with the idols. And I think it's going to drive her a little bit crazy. And I'm looking forward to that. The only other thing I would say, Josh, and I want to ask you about this. Is it possible that now that Debbie kind of went against Joe, or Debbie, Aubrey went against Joe and got rid of Debbie, that the guys are going to make entreaties to Joe and try to pull him over?
It's certainly in the possibility. You know, I think that it's not an impossibility that those guys are going to pitch Joe on something. I feel like we have seen Aubrey and Joe vote in different directions in the past, and it got smoothed over pretty well. I feel like Aubrey and Joe have been through a lot together, and I have a harder time seeing Joe being willing to get rid of Aubrey or to turn on Aubrey now. He seems like a solid, loyal guy that even with Aubrey voting against Debbie, if she can come to Joe and explain why she did it, I think that Joe is going to stick with her through thick and through thin.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
I also don't think that he's going to respect the guys who dumped water on his fire. They made such a point of stressing that Joe is the fire guy. He's the guy, and they ruined his fire. They ruined his life's work. So I feel like it's hard for me to see Joe wanting to play ball with those guys. But if it's in his best interest, I'd be rooting for him to do whatever's in his best interest.
Yeah, and they rubbed it right in his face. Like, well, you're the fire starter. Start a fire again.
Right.
You know, like, you're right. I think as far as honor and integrity go, you know, what is it? You always say, what are coaches' words?
I believe it's honor, loyal, integrity.
Honor, loyal, integrity. Yeah. Weird words, as you've covered on the Evolution of Strategy with Rob.
Yeah.
As far as that goes, I think Joe does buy into that a little bit. I'd be interested to know if Debbie informed Joe before the vote. Like, hey, I'm sorry, but it is going to be Debbie. You don't have to vote for her. You can vote for whoever you want.
That's the story from Debbie, at least, who has said in my exit interview and in tons of other exit interviews, she said, I feel like it's me tonight. She says that Joe went to her and said, they're coming after you.
Right.
And Debbie was like, yeah, I get it. It's fine. I'm ready to go eat a cheeseburger.
Yeah. And I don't know how much of that I do or don't believe.
Hard to say. Exit interviews are not canon, as our friend Fish says.
They're awesome, though.
But they are awesome. They're really fun.
Especially
all right,
yours.
Good stuff here. Antonio loved the Mazzaro Zone this week. This was very, very fun. Good mixture of narrative conversation, some strategic talk in there as well. I think this was really fun.
Yeah. I'm so honored and thankful that you had me fill in the Wiggle Room. This is a real pleasure for me. I'm very happy to have the opportunity to do it. So I'm glad we could talk about all these things and a little bit more.
Antonio, do we have a hashtag here? Is it hashtag Tylo Ren?
I guess if people are really married to the idea of hashtags, Josh, we can make it Tylo Ren. But yeah, you know, I was going to say there are no hashtags in the Mazzaro.
Really?
No.
They've all gotten eaten up?
How do you think the mannequins live?
Oh my God, they eat. They live on hashtags.
Well,
hashtags are made of people.
First, I fed them all the hash I had. Then I fed them the hashtags.
Oh,
just
God.
In a natural evolution.
All right. Well, Mazzaro Zone rules are no hashtag. Wiggle Room rules are hashtags. So you can give us Tylo Ren if you want.
How would we spell Tylo Ren if we wanted to spell that?
Let's go TAILOREN.
I love it. Tylo Ren.
Good stuff. Follow Antonio. He's on Twitter at AC Mazzaro. How many Z's and R's are there in that one?
Two Z's, one R.
That's how you follow Antonio on Twitter. He's doing tons of stuff on Post Show Recaps. Better Call Saul wrapping up this week. Him and Rob are going to have a podcast about the season finale. Tons of stuff on Most Shows Recapped as well. More podcasts coming up with Antonio in the not too distant future. Follow me. I'm at Round Howard. We'll be back with another Wiggle Room next week when Rob is back. When Rob comes back and we do another Wiggle Room, I think that there might be a little bit of a Game of Thronesy thing going on. So if you're into the hint Survivor Riverland stuff, maybe get excited about next week's Wiggle Room. Other than that, anything else, Antonio?
I'm not just excited. I'm hype.
Hype. Get hype. Yeah.
I'm cocaine totally bowl. Hype.
It is happening. All
I'm
right.
So hype about
That's
that.
That's what's going on. So we will be back next week. Can't wait for it. Take care, everybody. Goodbye.